This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 13th of November 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian Tobias. On today's show, we'll be talking about The Fear of 13, a documentary that confronts isolation on death row head-on. We'll get the lowdown on Tangerine, a low-budget film shot entirely on an iPhone. And we'll see what Dame Maggie Smith is up to in British comic drama The Lady in the Van. That's all to come here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome. Well, today I'm joined in studio by Tim Robey, film critic for The Daily Telegraph. Welcome, Tim. Let's start with The Fear of 13, a stark new film from British filmmaker David Sington. This feature documentary focuses on the life of prisoner Nick Yaris, who was released in 2004 from a Florida jail after having spent over 20 years on death row for a murder he did not commit. Yaris is the film's sole voice, and he spends much of the time talking directly to camera. Let's hear a little clip from the film first.
I've been arrested enough to know this one's bad. I was thrown into this world. No sunlight, and it's deadly silent. I had 105 years. I wasn't going anywhere. So I started reading. Everything changed. But at the heart of it, I was hit by the reality, I'm not free.
A clip from the documentary, The Fear of 13. Tell us a little bit about how did this film get made?
Well, I don't know much about the filmmaker's background. I actually came in cold. And as it begins, you're just being talked to by this guy in a cell. And I think almost that's the best way to see it. Just you're in company of this prisoner. He's very kind of interesting and charismatic in the way he delivers his kind of monologue. The whole film is really a monologue. And narratively, you don't really know where it's going. In fact, it doesn't necessarily set up the details of his crime at first. He's giving you information about the experiences he's had in prison, fellow prisoners and stories and things. And you're wondering if you're sort of settling in for a movie about the experience of being a prisoner, and then gradually the narrative emerges. I think David Sington's been quite clever in withholding some of that information for as long as possible, so that in fact it becomes very, very compelling, and you realise there are things at stake, and there are the question of his guilt or innocence, and also the question of his freedom and incarceration are actually in play as the film goes on, and you're like, is he still in jail? And I genuinely didn't know as I was watching it.
It sounds like a great study in construction and how the impact of a story on film totally depends on how the filmmaker constructs all the individual pieces.
That's absolutely right. It reminded me in that respect of Errol Morris's films, particularly The Thin Blue Line, which was a famous film he made in the 80s, which basically allowed a convict to be released because he constructed the whole story of this man's, the case against this man, and proved piece by piece that it was, in fact, a faulty case. And it has a sort of a similar construction in that we're basically dealing with one guy talking to camera, but we have kind of cutaways, quite sort of impressionistic shots of kind of his incarceration and his, you know, the environment he's in. But they're all little clues, and they all build towards this kind of very interesting kind of courtroom narrative that then emerges later on.
A few critics have said it blurs too much fact and fiction, but is not that just the beauty of filmmaking?
I think it's very artfully done, and I don't think there's too much fiction in there. There's just visual touches to kind of give you an atmospheric sense of his confinement, really. But he's such an interesting storyteller himself. He tells his own story so well that when we begin to hear about the case against him, he was a drug addict. He was initially arrested for one crime, and then kind of off the back of it, the police kind of piggybacked onto that and accused him of a murder. And just the kind of circumstantial sort of trap that he was caught in, if you like, back in that those early days of his youth, which have led to this kind of life imprisonment, is very vividly caught. And it's vividly caught just through his the way he describes it.
A film really with just one lead character. It wouldn't have worked if he wasn't so charismatic.
No, I mean, you wonder how David Sington came across him. That I don't know either. But he's just a mesmerizing subject for a film. So much so that you just listen to him tell his whole life story for kind of days on end. And of course, you know, the film is kind of edited down massively to a kind of 100-minute length. But it really earns every one of those minutes, I feel.
Intriguing. So The Fear of 13 did premiere at this year's London Film Festival, and it will be showing at Doc NYC this weekend. Next up, a film pushing boundaries in more ways than one. Tangerine, from U.S. director Sean Baker, tells the story of an L.A. sex worker, Cindy Rella, trying to make ends meet on the streets of L.A. The film has been praised for its unflinching depiction of the city's murkier corners, but also for its sensitive treatment of questions about the transgender community. It's also somewhat unique, having been shot entirely on an iPhone. Tim, tell us a little bit about the story of the iPhone making of this film.
Yeah, so Sean Baker actually shot this using three iPhone 5Ss. There are three of them, and they were kind of tripod mounted with special lenses. None of the equipment cost him more than, I don't know, $1,000. It's
amazing.
Extraordinary low budget shoestring enterprise, but it actually gives the film a real energy because you can sense that he's liberated. The camera can be almost anywhere, and there's so much energy to it. The quality of the image certainly doesn't have the depth of film, but it's extremely good. We've reached the point where, you know, those cameras are actually pretty amazing. So that's sort of a revolution in itself. And it's one of the most formally interesting films of the year from that point of view. But it fits the story, too, because it's such a kind of street level kind of narrative. We're dealing with two main characters who are both trans women, and they're friends. One of them just got out of prison and is told by her friend, oh, your boyfriend's been cheating on you with a biological woman. Or as the film describes her, and it's the kind of awful slang, fish, which is a horrible term that the trans community seems to use for biological women. But the film is very bold and raw in pushing those buttons and actually kind of being pretty honest in its kind of vulgarity and its kind of street language and all of that kind of thing.
Well, let's hear a clip from the film Tangerine now.
Cindy's back on the block?
Oh, yeah, she's back. She's back and she's going hard.
Merry Christmas, bitch.
Woo!
I got some good news to tell you
about me and Chester.
I know what it is. You're breaking up with him. Thank God. I'm gonna be cheating on you like that.
Wait, what?
You didn't know?
White boy.
Who is she? Her name starts with a D.
Danny.
Desiree.
Destiny?
You're making me lose my game.
She's some white fish.
Chester, and she know me with real fish?
Yeah, bitch, like a real fish. Girl, like vagina and everything.
The sound of the movie Tangerine. Tell us a little bit about the casting. Where did he source his characters?
I mean, these are West Hollywood gals, basically, and they've not acted before. They're both incredibly compelling, and actually the supporting cast are really kind of lively as well, but the main two are just so, I mean, they're just so kind of vital to watch. They're charging around the place. You know, Cindy Rella spends most of the film stomping around trying to find this Desiree or Dino or whatever your name is, and she keeps getting it wrong. And at one point you think she's yanked this girl out of a kind of a crack den to kind of interrogate her, and you think, well, this isn't even the same, you've got the name wrong, isn't this even the right person? And for kind of 10-15 minutes you think she's actually just plucked the wrong girl and is kind of accusing her of this infidelity. It's just got this charging energy to it, which I think it really is quite kind of, it kind of comes off the screen really compellingly. I think the acting is part of it. It's very kind of, feels very truthful and raw. You can tell that they don't have much experience as actors, but that almost helps the film. It kind of actually gives it a kind of weird docu-authenticity, I think.
This film isn't a documentary. It is a drama.
Right.
But is it revealing about that scene? Do we learn anything?
I mean, I learned what it might feel like to be in that kind of community. I got more of a sense of that than I've certainly ever had. I believed it. I think whether a lot of contrivance has been used, kind of artists has been used to kind of create that belief, we'd have to ask Sean Baker. But I think it manages to kind of convince you for 90 minutes that you are stomping around in this neighborhood. It's Christmas time, but the sun's out. It's kind of bright and bleached. And, you know, everyone's out on the streets. Everyone's kind of got their own little game, their own angle.
A West Hollywood tale, if ever there was one.
Yeah.
Well, hot off the back of the International Film Festival circuit, Tangerine is out now in the UK and will be released in France at the end of this year. Finally, we have The Lady in the Van, which tells the true story of Mary Shepherd, who lived in a battered van on the driveway of the celebrated British playwright Alan Bennett for 15 years. Maggie Smith plays the aforementioned lady. It is directed by Nicholas Heitner, who in fact directed the play of The Lady in the Van some 15 years or so ago. Now, the story, I gather, was first a book and then a play. How does it translate now as a film?
Yeah, so it's been 15 years since Maggie Smith played this role at the National Theatre. And in fact, it's funny because she's now caught up almost with the age of the character. And in a way, she's in a better position to play this role now. She's not really having to age herself up for it. And the real story is this kind of vagrant lady, Mary Shepherd, who kind of managed to coax Alan Bennett into letting her use his driveway for this whole... He was expecting her to be kind of gone within months or even dead within a year or two. She stayed for 15 years. And he turned this into a sort of memoir and then a play. And there's a lot of him in it. It's about as much Alan Bennett as you could possibly cram into one piece of work. He's one of the main characters, of course, and Alex Jennings plays him. Not only plays him, but plays him in a sort of double way. We have two Alex Jenningses on screen playing two Alan Bennetts, because he's imagined in dialogue with himself. There's both the writer Alan Bennett and the man, and they're always bickering. They're like an old married couple in a way. So that's one of the devices. But obviously the main attraction of the film is Maggie Smith in what's likely to be, I think, her last kind of really substantial role at the very centre of a film. I think she's ailing, actually. She's not, her stamina is not what it used to be. And this is a kind of a, it's given to her on a plate, this film, really, as a sort of a big swan song performance, I feel.
Well, let's have a listen now to an excerpt from the film The Lady in the Van.
An educated woman and living in a van.
I'm studying incognito at Paris.
But what are you studying?
Music. Piano forte. Put the van in your drive?
Just till you sort yourself out.
Looking especially lovely today, sweetheart.
Don't sweetheart me. I'm dying, possibly.
Chin up, love. We all gotta go sometime. Smells like you already have.
A little clip there from the movie The Lady in the Van. Now, it is amazing that that Maggie Smith, at her age, is really the lead female character. But is she playing the same kind of eccentric character that she always plays?
No, this is rather different because she's very downtrodden. She's homeless. And she's incredibly kind of ungrateful to him at all times. She doesn't really say thank you once during the film. She's cantankerous. I mean, cantankerous is what she normally does, but it's normally in a sort of an entitled kind of privileged way. And it's interesting to see her playing a character from really an underclass, really, instead. And that kind of allows her, gives her more to play in a way, or more originality in this performance. So I like that. You heard at the end of that clip, that was James Corden. In fact, almost every single actor who was in The History Boys, which was the last Nicholas Heitner, Alan Bennett film, except, of course, Richard Griffiths, who's no longer with us, pops up in this film. All of them do. Dominic Cooper's in there. Stephen Campbell Moore is in there. Francis de la Torre is in there. Absolutely everyone. So they all have their little cameos. It's quite an indulgent kind of love-in for fans of Alan Bennett, I feel. If you have any sort of allergy or scepticism towards Alan Bennett, I don't think this is the film to overturn it, perhaps.
The clip we just heard alluded to the sense of humour, the kind of sense of humour. Is this quintessentially British humour, or will it have an international appeal?
It does. I think the success of The History Boys abroad kind of proves that there's some appetite for Alan Bennett's particular kind of eccentric northern humour, I would say. It's quite specifically northern. But he's sort of trotting out some of his old favourite punchlines. Like, you know, someone will say, you know, someone will make an observation, he'll say, "This is London," and then any old observation after that is meant to be automatically funny. You know, you can say anything you like after "this is England" or "this is London." So he's sort of, it's a bit of a shtick, but anyone who knows they'll love this film, I think, will be fully on board it.
Well, The Lady in the Van is out now in the UK and Ireland and will roll out in Brazilian and American cinemas early next year. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. Tim Robey, thank you very much for joining us in studio. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian Tobias. My producer was Holly Fisher and my researcher was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time next week when Kathleen Fox-Davies will talk us through London's latest art exhibitions. But for now, thanks very much for listening. Bye-bye.